All right, and welcome back to episode of the Right Read Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Will. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all that good stuff at Bias Houston. Pass out to my co-host.
I'm Isaiah. You can find me on Twitter at user GZ Supremacy.
You can find me on Twitter at Depressed Rock. I mean, at Willums, W-I-L-L-L-U-M-Z.
Yeah, I must say, you can find me
at... He's actually the depressed.
Yeah, I was going to say, I should take that ad.
He's actually the depressed rock.
It's not there or not. We'll get to why that is.
What
are we doing today, Zay?
So today, we'll be previewing the top teams of the Western Conference. Going from 1 to 15 today, we'll be talking about the 1 through 7 seed. So we'll just go ahead and get into it. The Thunder last season, obviously defending champ Thunder. They were 68-14. Number one record in the entire league for notable additions. Jalen Williams and Chet both signed a rookie max extension. They extended A.J. Mitchell. They extended Jalen Williams. They drafted Thomas Sorber, who is continuing the theme for them of redshirt rookies. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He will not be playing this season. And they got Jalen William Kobe Pose also.
Oh.
So I think with the Thunder.
The Tatum mantle.
Yeah.
That's going to be a requirement every year. Somebody,
yeah, somebody got to do a Kobe pose.
It's going to be some new year.
Yeah.
New
player. Yeah, so
first time ring.
I mean, I don't think it's going to be too much to talk about with the Thunder because, I mean, when you're that good, it's only so many ways highest you can say you're really
season.
Good.
Yeah, highest
yeah.
win total since the 2016 Warriors. I mean, it's just they were the favorites last year. They won the championship last year. They're the favorites this year.
Yeah.
If they win the championship last year, this year, I don't think anyone's going to be shocked. They lost nobody. They brought back everybody.
Yeah.
They have a couple redshirt rookies, Topic and stuff.
Yeah, Topic coming back.
Topic coming back. We're going to probably play good roles for them. They draft really well. So, yeah. I mean, anyone have anything to say about the Thunder?
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think that we talked about it, I think, in the point guard episode. I expect the Thunder to be the best team in the league this season. And because I expect them to be the best team in the league this season, I think SGA is probably going to repeat MVP this year. I think we're going to do an actual predictions episode, but spoiler, I'm going to predict SGA is going to win MVP because he's going to be the best player.
Please still tune in.
I think
he would have the.
He's going to be the best player on by far the best team in the league next season. So that's typically how it goes. I think the Thunder, at least, not to jump with the gun, if anybody has something about the Thunder, but I think the Thunder, it's a bit more interesting to talk about them in relation to what's next, the number two seed, as opposed to just the Thunder in a vacuum.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, a lot has happened since we came here to record an episode.
I'll say real quick on the Thunder, a nice, interesting anecdote, because obviously there's not really much you can add to what they do in the regular season. It is what it is, right? In the playoffs last year, they had an 8.6 net rating overall. So the interesting thing is with Chet and Hardenstein on, it was a plus 2.4. With Hardenstein on and Chet off, it was a plus 7.4. With Chet on and Hardenstein off, it was a plus 15.1.
Jesus.
Sounds like no more double big for the playoffs.
Yeah, so it's honestly interesting because you look at how good they already are, and that seems like a very clear pathway for them to be even better in a regular season and playoff context. So
I think that speaking of double bigs, I think
that's a good transition.
That's a nice pivot to the two seed who had a very, very interesting offseason, a busy offseason, to say the least. Obviously, we're talking about the Houston Rockets last season, where the number two seed went through a crazy overhaul this offseason, trading
52 wins.
52-win season last year, obviously. Went through a crazy overhaul this offseason, trading away the guy who started the rebuild in Jalen Green. He was their first pick of this new era of Rockets basketball back in 2021. Him, along with Dylan Brooks, were shipped away, along with the first-round pick that ended up becoming Kamal Malawach, for Kevin Durant. It was something that was heavily rumored since last season's trade deadline, something that finally came into fruition. Kevin Durant is a Houston Rocket. Aside from that, though, they stayed busy. Dorian Finney-Smith, who I think is one of the best role players in basketball, and all analytics and advanced data will show you that he is just a master in his role. Doubled down on their strengths by adding Clint Capella, Josh Okogie. And then we found out 24 hours ago about at this point?
Over 24 hours.
At the time
of this recording.
At the time of recording this, about 24 hours ago, Fred VanVleet in the Bahamas during the regular team getaway.
You know, it's not confirmed he was practicing it.
Yeah, it wasn't confirmed he's practicing, but he was.
He could have been doing something.
Yeah, he was in the Bahamas and his ACL was torn. They got second, third, fourth, fifth opinions on it, and everyone came back the same that Fred VanVleet will most likely be out for this entire season. First and foremost, prayers up to Fred. Heck of a player, the things he's tried doing for this city, the things he has done for this city, what he's done for the organization. Could not be more grateful for how he came in, was a consummate professional, really exuded what leadership was and what it meant to be a professional. Obviously got named MVPA president. And man, it just sucks to have all of that positivity going for him and for this team. And the one guy where it kind of felt like, well, he's not going to get hurt. He can't get hurt. Tears his ACL, and it seems like he's going to be out for the season. I don't know if anybody else wants to pick up on.
Do you want to give the Fred obituary or?
Obituary is so nasty, man.
I have a lot to say, but it's more on just what that means for the team. So I don't know if anybody wants
I mean, so I'll say it. I think Fred has an argument for the best undrafted guard career.
Undrafted guard career, it's him.
Yeah, I think
the question is he the best undrafted player?
And that's he gets in arguments like Ben Wallace and stuff like that where it gets tougher. But I think if he's not the best undrafted player ever, he's top up there. Three.
Yeah.
Right. And I think phenomenal career over starting in Toronto, NBA championship,
all-star
appearance. And then he also, people forget this, he was like a vote away from winning finals MVP for that championship. He got like real consideration for that. It's how well he guarded Steph, how well he played defense. I really am talking about him like he died.
Yeah, like he's still alive.
Listen,
bro.
I'm just saying because I think when you're on the wrong side of 30, he was already taking a statistical decline in the regular season, obviously not in the playoffs because he shows up in those kind of big moments. And that's always the kind of guy he's been and the kind of guy we were looking forward to seeing him as this season. That kind of big shot guy, the steadying hand, the low turnover person, the leader. It's cliche, leader, heart and soul of the team. And it really is painful to have him out for what's going to be the entire season and playoffs. It's an ACL injury and he's 31 years old. Hopefully he comes back to the league.
He'll be bad. I think just the question with him is what he looks like anymore. I will say I think what he'll have going for him, it's a bit twofold with him. His game was never built on athleticism. I think something people don't take into account with Fred VanVleet. If you've ever watched him warm up, we live in Houston, so we get to go to games, and you get there a little early. He was always the last guy warming up before game start. You realize how much he uses his legs for his jumper. Like, he is a leg shooter. A lot of guys are upper body now. It's become a new trend of, like, trainers will teach you one motion, upper body release. Fred generates so much power from his legs.
Why he shoots so far.
Yeah, that's why he can shoot from.
That's why his range is like that.
And it's really interesting to see, like, how he adjusts from a torn ACL. It wasn't a PCL, an MCL,
torn
a meniscus.
ACL.
Torn ACL, man. The worst muscle in that knee that you could tear and... Can we talk about some of those problems, man?
I want to speak on why I was just so devastated. Obviously, for Fred as a person first, because I think Dre did a really good job of illustrating what he's meant to this city and what he's meant to this team. And so I'm forever thankful for that. As a matter of fact, that's why I'm wearing...
Yeah, this dude feel like a funeral guy.
I'm wearing the cursed t-shirt because...
Shingun, please stay safe.
Dylan and Jalen are in Phoenix and Fred's ACL storm is... We got to pray for that guy because Lord have mercy. But I think a lot of people were kind of, I'll say, mad at me when I said I think that this kind of ends the Rockets' chances of winning a championship this year. And I do want to go ahead and throw out the caveat that that's me saying as currently constructed.
Barring some trade.
I think we can get into it in a second. But the Rockets, unfortunately, cannot make any trades or signings right now until December 15th unless you want to trade one of Reed Shepard or Tari Eason, which I'm pretty positive no one watching this wants us to do. So the roster, for the most part, is the same. So assuming this is the roster we have going into the playoffs, I do think we're going to struggle to win a championship. I think we're going to be a great regular season team still. I don't think it necessarily changes too much of my win predictions for the Rockets in that department. I think it doesn't change much of my predictions for the Rockets in terms of beating some of the other teams in the Western Conference. It is those two teams that scare me before this injury, and I think with this injury, they really terrify me. And OKC, who we just talked about, and Denver, who gave OKC a real run for their money last playoffs and then improved upon everything that they were weak at this offseason. And I'm going to steal a point from Mars. Shout out Mars on Player's Choice, but he had a really good segment on their latest episode talking about the injury where you look at all the guys who hit a pull-up three for the Rockets, or not even hit pull-up threes, but who led.
Took them.
Yes, who took them. They're all gone, right? Yeah. Fred VanVleet's He's gone with injury, unfortunately. We traded Jalen. We traded Dylan. We traded Cam. Amin Thompson, love him to death. Didn't shoot pull-up threes. We signed Dorian Finney-Smith, who shot, I believe, 40% from three, 41% from three.
He shot
pretty much all.
But it was, yeah, 0.1 pull-up threes. He doesn't shoot pull-up threes.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant can do it, but that's not necessarily his game.
Historically, he took like one pull-up three a game last year.
That's not really his game.
That's not what he
does. And so we lost someone who takes those pull-up threes. We lost someone who, let's also be honest, how many guys on this roster can run a pick and roll? How many guys on this roster has a functional handle? You look at like the Pacers, for example, another team that gave OKC a run for their money. They gave them a run for their money because they had a bunch of guys. They had like 6-7 guys on that roster who can dribble with the ball on the floor. How many of those guys do we have?
It's
not that many. So I think people underestimate how much losing Fred really hurts this team. And I think they're also underestimating how good we'll have to be to beat Denver and OKC.
I will say on the pull-up three-point percentage point, during last year's finals, there was a whole spreadsheet FC. OKC loses, what does this mean?
Yeah.
I've always held the point that everyone just looks at spreadsheets as on-offs, and I think it's so much deeper than that. You have to understand how this team got to these on-offs. Something I found out, across the past 5 seasons, every team outside of the Thunder, which they ended up breaking the mold on this, every team that ended up winning a championship was either top 5 in passes per game or top 5 in pull-up three-point percentage and pull-up rate per game. The Celtics were 24th in passes. They were 8th in percentage with 2nd in pull-up rate. The Nuggets were 6th in passes and 4th in pull-up rate. The Warriors were 3rd in passes, 2nd in pull-up rate. Bucks were dead last in passes. They were 1st in pull-up three-point percentage rate from pull-ups. You have to be number one.
Do you know we were last year? Five.
We were 28 and 28 in both. It was bad.
We didn't take a lot of pull-up threes, and then the guys we
didn't
had
pass
taken
the ball.
Them,
yeah, it
was, yeah, like. Well, the guy, and then the guys we had taken them were Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, and Fred.
And
they're
not here.
they're not here. And then off the top of my head, I think those guys all shot like under 32%.
Yeah, I think Dylan was the best at 33.4. Jalen was 31. Yeah. Fred was 31. I think the pushback I have on that, it'll look closer to the OKC model of basketball, to where Shea is not a traditional point guard. They don't run a ton of pick and roll. They don't necessarily have a. And I don't want to disrespect Shai Gilgeous-Alexander by saying this, but a high feel offensive engine. They don't have Luka down there throwing 90 skip passes. Trae Young is running double drag to a lift and a lob. Like, it's a different type of offense. It, for the most part, is a ISO-heavy, rely-on-our-defense type of offense. The Rockets' recipe to success, I think with and without Fred, was going to be built into that. Şengün is a self-creator. I think you're going to have to lean into him as a hub overall, whether it be post-ups, whether it be him. Ime, please cut out them 22-foot Şengün, please cut out them 22-foot ISOs, bro. Like, you're 6'11". Get your big behind in the post. You're too good at it. But whether it be his ISOs, his DHOs, Amin Thompson, which is something I don't think was discussed enough at all. It was very limited last year in his ISO attempts. When you include his isolation with passes, he was 83rd percentile. He is a phenomenal isolation basketball player. And I think it's something he's been good at since OTE. I think it's something that he's going to continue to progress and grow upon. I think his handle is going to get better. He's going to get more reps with it. That's going to be the recipe for this team. That's why I look at the pull-up shooting and say, we don't necessarily need it. Because a point that I've heard other people make, and I do somewhat agree, it's not like you're replacing good pull-up shooting with a different shot. I'm replacing bad pull-up shooting with a Kevin Durant ISO. I'm replacing bad pull-up shooting with a Şengün post-up and a Amin Thompson ISO. Other play types that history has told me are more effective than hoping and praying Jalen Green and Dylan Brooks got it going on. Hoping and praying that it's one of the good regular season days for Fred. I do agree with your point on championship aspirations. I think where Fred's absence is going to be felt more is the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. Like, no, it's not the rookie season.
That's where it's
down the
felt.
Stretch of the playoffs last year in games 4, 5, and 6, he averaged 24 points on 44% shooting from three.
Yeah.
Like, we just have nobody on the roster that can replicate something like that anymore.
We don't have that many guys who can dribble. And I think that, to me, is the bigger issue here. Because, like, and I want Zay to speak to, like, Reed and Amin in a second. But, like, I believe a lot in Amin Thompson. I talked about that a lot on this very podcast. And for those who don't know, I was all in on drafting Reed Shepard. But I think both of them taking the development that's needed to supplant what we're losing in Fred. I think one for Reed is just flat out unrealistic. He's in my eyes, a red shirt. What do you call Thomas Harper, a red shirt rookie? Like,
yeah.
I think Reed is like, he's not necessarily the same vein because he did play last season, but he didn't.
That's pretty close.
Yeah, he didn't really play.
Pretty close.
I mean, it really is.
And you know what I'm saying? So like, I look at kind of next season almost as like, this is your it was going to be like his first season. Now it's the meme where you became important on your job. Like, he's really important now. And so I think it's kind of unreasonable and unrealistic to place those expectations on him. I think with the men, it's a bit more reasonable. But even then, I think it still sucks because I just think beating a Denver team, beating an OKC team, regardless, is going to take all hands on deck.
Even with Fred.
Yeah, even with Fred, it was going to be an uphill battle. Even with Amen Thompson taking the leap and Reed Shepard being a bit more ahead of schedule than what you could hope, I still think you're going to miss Fred VanVleet's steady hand, his leadership. The fact that he keeps turnovers low, the fact that he can hit a three, the fact that he shows up in the playoffs.
Turnovers.
Like I said, I think people who were acting like this isn't a major loss are drastically underrating how important Fred was to this team. But
that's not important thing. So turnovers.
Yeah, I want to, and I'm glad y'all spoke on that because I want to speak on this. So I do agree with Dre's point. I think a lot of what you're going to miss with Fred is going to become postseason time. And I think a lot of what you're going to miss with Fred is more so going to be some of, like, the connectivity stuff. And then in terms of guys you want shooting catch-and-shoot three-point shots, he was amongst the top of the team, obviously. And then he also gives you the element of being able to run a pick-and-roll and shoot a pull-up. But, you know, I'm going to get into the nerd stats, right?
There he goes, fellas.
Bear with me on this one because I'm going to try to move quickly so I'm not taking a 20-minute segment with this. So, I pulled up some notable stats with and without Fred from last season specifically because I do think that there needs to be a differentiation between 23-24 Fred and last year's Fred. One, because he was just a more efficient player in 24, right? He was significantly more efficient.
Yeah, he had a career year.
Yeah. I would argue that it is his best season for his career in terms of scoring efficiency. I think it is his most efficient season.
Yep, it was.
And then in terms of his assist volume, if I'm not mistaken, it was also either
like
one or 9.1
assists on like, yeah. 1.7
right. turnover. Yeah,
and I will also say to add on to that, that Rockets team was also a worse roster around him. So I think in terms of all of the impact metrics and things like that, it painted that picture. I think last season, it's important to make that differentiation because you have more Amen Thompson. Obviously, we still had Jalen. And you also have Şengün. So now you have more ball handling options, more playmaking options. And so I think that that showed up in the numbers. So I'll just run through these real quick. So turnovers per 100 possessions, right? Because that's the big stat that's flying around. When Fred was on, 12.7. When Fred was off, 15.6.
Dang, that's
assist,
a three turnover difference?
Yeah. Assists per 100 possessions. When Fred was on, it was 23.6. When Fred was off, it was 23.7. Assist points, 57.6 when he was on, 57.7 when he was off. Three-point attempt rate, right? Because that's the other thing that's been flying around. 38.6 when he was on, 38.1 when he was off.
Well, I think the three-point attempt rate is also going to be, we also lost Jalen, who led our
team. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
Brooks, who was our second leading three-point attempt. So, like, the loss of all three of those guys is what's
going to hurt. Yeah, that number is going to drop. But I think from the context of people speaking on Fred's direct impact to the team, I think it's important to look at the rate there. Because when he was off the court last year, we're getting up threes pretty much at the same rate. So it wasn't like him being on the court, which is automatically driving us to shoot more threes. He himself was shooting threes, but because he's not generating a high volume of threes, the rate ends up being the same.
He generates more of the touches down low.
And so I'll quickly rattle these other ones off. Pace per 100, this is another stat that folks are pretty familiar with, right? 96.4 possessions when him on, 100.1 when him off. Three-point field goal made assisted, 78% with Fred on, 80.1% with him off. And then last but not least, effective field goal percentage. 51.7% with Fred on, 52.9% with Fred off. And so the reason why I listed all of those numbers is because the turnover suppression that Fred offers is very important. And like I said, I think it was extremely important the first season he was here because when the roster was less talented, you needed the turnover suppression to play the defense and, you know,
grind the game.
Pretty much the like Steelers-esque. I'm going to hold you to 17 points and not turn the ball over, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we needed there. Last season, because his efficiency took a dip and his assist production also took a dip, despite him still averaging, I think it was the second highest touches on the team, and despite him averaging almost 6 seconds per touch, him suppressing the turnovers didn't necessarily help us offensively as much as people think it would. because the other of like Phil, the other efficiency stats went down when he was on the court because he himself was not as efficient. Also, like I said, he's not generating more threes by virtue of him being on the court. He just shoots a lot of threes, right? And so I think the overarching point there is there's a very, very realistic pathway. There was going to be a realistic pathway with him even playing that with him taking less on-ball reps, we would average more turnovers, be a more efficient offense, right? And I think without Fred, you're going to see it even more because I didn't bring up the numbers today because I would have been like, it actually would have took like 20 minutes. But when you look at Sengun and Amen's numbers as opposed to Fred, for these other numbers, like effective field goal percentage, three-point field goals assisted, all of these numbers, they go up when they're on the court, right? And this is with them being third and fourth on the team in usage. So now those are going to be the two guys who are leading your offense. And so
it has to be.
Yeah, yeah. At this point, there's no other options. Yeah,
no other options. Yeah, I think that's a big thing that like mm-hmm. we were talking about going into this year was like, oh, Fred's gonna be the fourth, fifth option again, right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. the offense is gonna be led by Sengun, KD, Amen. This is gonna be our new big three hierarchy, and there was some hesitancy in like, ooh, like what if Ime wants to rely on like the tried and true Fred PNR kind of version of this team?
Shit, we got no choice.
I mean, that's gone. Like we used to call Fred and Dylan Brooks the training wheels when they first.
Yeah, they are.
Y'all remember? Yeah. Training wheels are traded or on the bench, right? Like they can't play. They're way off. And in a way, I think while it kills our championship chances for this year, there's a world where long term, it's actually beneficial for the Rockets.
100%.
Yeah, and that's like the silver lining of this whole situation, just from a team perspective of like, okay, expectations are kind of off, right? Like when you lost your starting point guard, people aren't going to be like, oh, it's championship or bust now, right? It's a little bit that talk has quieted down, even though you still have KD on your roster. But now it's like, okay, you know what? If you asked me before this Fred injury who I thought the starting backcourt was in 2 years, I probably would have told you Amen Thompson or Reed Shepard. Now I just have to figure that out.
Now you get to
I get to see it now and
to throw them into that fire. Yep.
I will say, I think the a point that we haven't discussed in regards to how this offense is going to look. I just want to read this off real quick. If Jose can get his numbers off, I hope I can. excellent, 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 excellent. Very good.
Oh,
very
KD
good. Very
play
good.
Type,
very
huh?
good. Very
that's,
good.
That's
very great. Good. This is Kevin Durant's offensive play types last season. He is still one of the best on-ball players in basketball. He's still one of the best off-ball players in basketball. He's one of the best players.
I was about to say, he's just one of the best players
to this day. I think the plan, I think, originally was he gets to be more of a play finisher with Fred, with Amen, with Sengun. He's going to be on ball more, I think more than they would have ideally wanted to when they originally signed him. But that's still a great option to have. Yeah. A Kevin Durant pick and roll was more effective than a Fred VanVleet one. As bad as bad as it might sound to a lot of people, it's just statistically across the last 5 seasons, it's been more effective. A Kevin Durant ISO will be the most effective play type we've had since a James Harden ISO.
Yeah.
Like, that's just how it's going to go. So I do think that there are going to be fallback options. The main thing for me is come playoff time when it becomes a real possession battle. That's something the Rockets the last couple of seasons have really built an identity around of winning the possession game with offensive rebounds and not turning the ball over. Until we see Amen Thompson, Reed Shepard, Alperen Sengun, even KD, who can be a bit turnover prone when he is on ball a lot.
Yeah.
Until we see those guys really suppress their turnovers across an 82-game sample size, it's just going to be hard for me to believe that in a 16-game sample size, when I need you to really, really conduct an offense in a condensed floor, like, it'll get a little nasty there, I think. But I'm not as doom and gloom as I was when the news first broke to us. But
so on that, right? I wanted to say this real quick before we move on to the Rockets. 2 seed last year, 52 wins. Who here on this table thinks that that's the position they're going to be in at the end of this season? Now that we
the second seed or 52 wins.
Either or.
We're going to win more than 50.
Yeah, I think we're going to be better.
Okay, but do you think we're going to be the second seed?
No, because I think...
Oh, we didn't discuss OKC's range, but I think their range is dead. Either
the range is
one or one. Yeah, yeah.
I think ours starts at 2 and is no lower than 4.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
I think we're like 3 to 5.
I think we could be 2. Only reason I'll say 2 to 6 is because I think the West will be a bit condensed. I think like 50 wins could end up being the 6th seed.
Oh, we're going to be more than
that. No, I'm saying, but
I have to be clearing that.
I think you could win 50 games.
I'm going to say we could win like I Now, honestly, I think I've set it at 55 wins. I think that's what it, I think we'll look a lot better net rating wise. I think the process will look a lot better. I just don't know if a big net rating jump will look like plus 10, plus 12 wins the way it might supposed to have looked on paper. But I do think that we will win more games just because we're a better team. Generally, with or without Fred, we're a better team. But yeah, I don't know if it'll lead to 58, 60 the way I kind of felt with Fred healthy. Because I'm gonna be honest, them five games extra, those are the five games where I know Fred was going to have his magnet ball games. Unless I find five magnet ball games.
And man, Reed got us, man.
Yeah. Isaiah Reed, Darius Shepherd, what do you have for me, man?
You ready to go to the Lakers?
Yeah, we go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The men's health tour of 2025.
So the Lakers last season finished 50-32. They had the sixth best record in the league. Their notable additions was more the Lakers divorce rumors. Contract year Aiden, Marcus Smart, Jake LaRavia, and 85% of the national TV games.
You said that? I forgot they had Marcus
Smart. Yeah, they got Marcus Smart. Yeah. Don't forget also, I think something people have not recognized, new ownership.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they also did sell a team.
Group in place. Apparently, the rumors, you talked about me using Synergy earlier. Apparently, the Lakers didn't have that. Apparently, the Los Angeles Lakers, the most valuable team in basketball outside of the New York Knicks, didn't have Synergy. JJ Redick.
What were they using to draft?
JJ Redick asked.
And they don't miss draft-wise. Are they going to get better draft?
I was about to say, what were they? Were they just drafting off vibes?
Aura.
That's really what it was. And it's Aura drafting, doing it was working.
No, but I think the crux of this Lakers season is going to come down to, as he said, Men's Health magazine.
Men's Health, man.
Doctors hate him. What is his secret? Fit Luka Doncic playing POA defense.
Oh, yeah, they also did get skinny Luka Doncic.
Yeah, I was going to say, skinny Luka getting DPOY votes in Eurobasket this year. Honestly, what does he look like? Because at his best, we've seen Luka 2 years ago, like 30-plus, almost pushing a 33-point triple-double. Leading a team to the finals.
Yeah.
Like, Luka at the peak of his powers is like an incredible player. And apparently that was too fat for the Mavericks. So, like, skinny Luka.
Oh, yeah.
Skinny, man.
Yeah. Skinny Luka. What's he going to do? Is he going to give me like solid defense now with the same 33-point triple double he was pushing towards 2 years ago? Or is he going to look more akin to what he looked like last year post trade, which is a little bit of more of a drop offensively and efficiency wise, but with better defense now that he's lost some weight? I don't know, but I think that is the Lakers season. The Lakers season is as far as Luka is going to go and as good as he's going
to
be.
I think a lot of it also, for me at least, comes down to what version of LeBron they get and what do they decide to do with him and how does he want his career to end? Because LeBron is not the same player that he was a couple seasons ago. He's definitely regressed a little bit offensively and defensively, and I think there is a really valid argument to be made that, at least for the future of the Lakers and like building around Luka, you know, towards the future, might want to consider moving on from LeBron. Yeah. But we talked about that on the other episodes, how difficult it will be to trade LeBron for most of the reasons. So I think the biggest question mark is what happens with, does he retire a Laker? Does he finish the season a Laker? Is he going to find the fountain of youth for the fourth time in his career? And like,
he's essentially an expiring contract.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or is he going to kind of start progressing a little bit more? I think a lot of their season is contingent upon what happens with LeBron James.
The big thing on the Luka thing real quick was the reason I think Luka's more of the swing factor is LeBron's impact metrics, even when he's on the court now, are like,
were better with LeBron off last year. Right?
Yeah. And that's why, even if LeBron, let's say like, he doesn't decline at all, which at his age is a miracle. Just make that clear. If LeBron is literally the exact same player he was 39-40 as he is 40-41, that is already like beyond unprecedented. Everything he's doing on the court right now is a miracle for modern science. And that player was kind of a negative. Like, it wasn't.
It wasn't their floor. I think that's, for years I thought LeBron James was just going to retire when that last contract finished. Then I realized he has another kid. And that kid's going to college next year. And y'all laughing. Bryce James is probably going to declare one and done. And that's a bargaining chip for LeBron James now at this point. He's still a valuable asset, whether on or off the court, to a lot of NBA franchises about,
ticket sales.
I'm going to say, do you want to have retirement tour LeBron James ticket sales?
You would make so much money.
Like, do you want that? Like, that's what it's going to come down to for a lot of next year. I think if I'm the Lakers personally, if I don't get assurance he's retiring, I'm done. I'm done. I don't even
let him walk in
face? Just let him walk. Like the on-off swing, and shout out to Isaiah for doing all this work. The on-off swing with Luka on and LeBron off is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Luka on, LeBron off, plus 19.67. And that's not that limited of a sample size. He got traded at the deadline.
Yeah.
Like, about a week, I must say.
Before the deadline. Essentially, he played.
Yeah, it's the deadline and the playoffs included.
I'm going to say they have 1,000 minutes together.
Yeah, they do. They do.
Which is usually about the sample size you want to take into these lineups. Seriously, they have about 1,000 minutes together, and Luka's a plus 20 without him. And they had a horrible team last year. Yep. We know what the blueprint for building around Luka Doncic looks like. Give me three wings, a lob threat, and a score. That's what it looks like, and it could take you to the finals. Genuinely. And by all accounts, if they don't run into God's gift to spreadsheet basketball, who knows? Luka might have a ring in Dallas right now. They just ran into a juggernaut Celtics team. Genuinely.
Yeah, really. Yeah, so I was gonna get to the nerd numbers, so I'm glad you did. Because two different points. One, I think the LeBron point, you already mentioned it with the on-off. The other point was you asked, what is Luka? What is he gonna be? So that's something that I wanted to touch on, because also in the doc, right? Luka's on-off swing with Dallas from 2021 to 2024, he had a plus 3.16 swing. They had a plus 3.74 net rating when he was on, plus 0.56 when he was off. Since he's gotten to the Lakers, it is a plus 12.75 swing. Mind you, this is
it's not even peak.
Yeah, this is arguably probably his worst season in the last five seasons, right? Plus 7.78 on, negative 4.96 off. So to me, that's pretty crazy, because you can look at what he did statistically, and it's very clearly worse than what he's looked like the last three seasons. And a lot of that is very clearly also due to him being injured. And even through him playing with all of those injuries, I mean, the on-off swing is crazy. And so a fully healthy Luka Doncic, as healthy as Luka can be, because we know he's just always questionable.
But a prime, like, peak of his powers, Luka.
Yeah.
Which
I think what his on-off swing might end up being for this team, it might get to that, like, SGA, Luka, Giannis, and like, 2020 level of, like, oh, well, when he's on, they're, like, plus 9, and then when he's off, they're, like, negative 8. Also, another thing that I did not add to the doc, because I was also looking at the stat line shifts with Luka and LeBron and Austin Reeves, and the point that you made about the scoring guard, that was something that came up to me, because obviously we know how Brunson looked with Luka, and then also, you know, famously how Kyrie looked. When Luka and Austin Reeves are on, Austin Reeves is averaging 21-6-5 on 68 true Jesus shooting.
Christ.
Yeah. He's getting guarded by nobody.
Yeah, and so that, I think, brings up to the point, Austin Reeves fits with Luka. I think he very clearly fits with the archetype of player that Luka plays with in a backcourt. And so that circles back to,
is that a viable defensive backcourt,
though? I was going to say,
I think so.
I think you'd want your Luka Doncic backcourt running mate to be better defensively than Reeves. But I think
offensively,
I think they can circumvent that if they make up for
one. I mean, I think positionally they're both tall for their positions.
Their defense.
No. They're not good defensively.
I'm not having it, bro.
In a playoff setting, I do think if what you're trying to go to is target balling like Austin Reeves for an entire playoff series, right? You're running a bunch of pick and rolls and a bunch of ISOs. I think they can be good enough offensively as a duo to where that's just not efficient enough offense to beat them. And so, yeah, that's crazy.
We're getting rained on.
It's raining.
Yeah.
I think what that comes down to is what obviously the cast you put around them, but I think a lot of the concerns with Luka and Kyrie were the same. You know, what does their fit look like? How well is the fit? Are they a good enough duo? And we saw a Dallas team that, frankly, it's a good team, but in terms of defensive personnel, that's not a team that
they
look out.
Tell me I'm wrong at this. That, I remember post-trade deadline, they had the number one defensive basketball.
Yeah.
They did.
And I would say with the personnel team that they have, I don't think that's a team that you look and say, I can't go replicate that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I would say, I think my pushback on the Reeves thing, and I do want us to be able to move on past this, I'm not paying him.
Reeves?
I'm not paying Reeves. I'm not.
Well, what's he asking for?
If he asks for that price tag, I think that I can build
what's the
a price better.
You don't think Reeves is worth $40 million?
Yeah, no, I don't think. If he asks for that, if he asks for 40, No, I would give him.
Wow, I'd give him 40.
I would give him 40 for us. I'm not gonna lie.
Rockets were saying Austin Reeves, I'd give you about 35. 40 might 35. Be. 40 might be. 40. Ah, 40's
I mean, y'all gotta adjust for the cap inflating.
Yeah, you know what? That's right. That's right. You know, I'll give you that.
For the Lakers and how I think you need to build a team around Luka, I think there's a better $40 million player out there to fit next to Luka.
I go, is there?
Can I throw a name out? And I don't want this to turn into that. If I'm the Lakers, bro, we talk about skinny Luka. There's a guy in New Orleans right now.
That's not a $40 million player gang.
On the other episode, bro.
He
gonna make like 1.5 times as much as Austin Reeves is gonna make.
I'd rather pay that guy that than Austin Reeves.
I mean, that's a fair point, but I think for the price tag that you're talking about,
he is the best player in that group.
We'll get
into it, man.
We'll get to it.
Move on to Denver.
Let's get to it.
Oh, no. Last second. Third seed.
Oh.
Do we think Lakers are there again next year?
I'd say top four comfortable.
I think top four.
I think their range is 2 to 5.
Yeah, I could see them being.
But I think it's very comfortably
Luka's
five.
A full Luka's, season, Luka's they've the never been below the five answer. Seed. So I think it'll be top.
Yeah, they've also been a 50-win team pretty much.
So Luka guarantees you top five. So I'll say fifth.
Yeah, I think it's Luka four or five.
If you Luka ask me right now, I think they're right back here next year. I think they're back in the third seed.
I don't think they are because I think the team we're talking about next is gonna be better than them, and I think we'll be better than them as well.
Yeah. So let's get to the Nuggets. 50 and 32, also tied for the sixth best record in the league. Notable additions: Tim Hardaway Jr., Bruce Brown, Jonas Valanciunas. God's chosen one, Deron Holmes, is playing this season. They traded for Cam Johnson. Notable losses: Westbrook Stan accounts, MPJ's podcast, and also MPJ and Dario Saric.
Who cares?
Man.
What will they do without Dario Saric, man?
What are they going to do without MPJ talking about women's basketball?
I can't talk about MPJ.
Hey, I bet they PR guy. Very happy.
I think, we can talk about I'll let you talk about Cam Johnson. I was talking about Valanciunas for them.
Yeah.
I think.
Real backup big.
I was going to say, do people understand that Nikola Jokic has been going on for the last, like, 5-6 seasons with, like, the corpse of DeAndre Jordan and Jeff Green and all these other ragtag guys?
You can move farther than that. I think the most legitimate backup big they've had is like dead Mason Plumlee.
Oh, yeah, Mason.
Yeah,
Mason
Plumlee.
Like,
probably,
been good. Yeah.
Why that gave him a minute at that point in time. But yeah, they had not had a real backup five ever, really.
Last year, it was DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah. And so, like, now you're giving Jokic someone. I mean, you know, we've seen double bigs who knows? Maybe you try double big with that. But if nothing else, you have someone that can back up Nikola Jokic for the first time ever. And I think just that alone, with everything else we're going to talk about, with the spacing additions, the chemistry, this is a team that was an injury away from potentially beating the reigning champions.
Yep.
And they got better at
across the board.
This team scares me. And I think that's one of the reasons why I talk about the Rockets. We would need all hands on deck.
You can make a very legitimate argument that Denver is the best team in the league right now.
I think in a playoff setting. In the playoffs, I can get argued. I would say regular season is the
And do you guys know what MPJ averaged in the playoffs for them last year?
Bad on bad.
Yeah, against OKC. Off the top of my head, I think he averaged 7 points.
Yeah.
On like sub 30% shooting from three. Like, that's
bad.
I don't want to say it, but like. he was like a big like knock on them, right? Like. And the fact that you replace that guy for Cam Johnson, who, granted, we don't have any playoff data on, but if he can give you better than...
I mean, he got to be better than 7 on 30%.
Like, if he can be better than MPJ was, like, I don't know. Like, that's really good
team. I will say, we've had this conversation about how garbage NBA centers are. They have the best one in the league. Jonas Valanciunas is a starting caliber center.
Just led Lithuania to a semifinals appearance.
Yeah, like Jonas Valanciunas starts for a lot of NBA teams.
Yep.
Like, he's a starting caliber center. Might not be the best starting caliber.
He started for one of the teams on this that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, like he's a starter in the NBA, and he's got him as a backup. And for anybody that doesn't know what GCP is, man, shout out to God's Chosen People, coined by me. Deron Holmes is one of the original members of God's Chosen People. If you are ever a draft nerd, you understand how much we love and how much you should love Deron Holmes. That guy is so good at basketball. He fits well next to Nikola Jokic. He can run units without Nikola Jokic. That guy's going to be so good for them. I don't care that he's a redshirt rookie. Oh, that looked good. Like Hoopla,
he wasn't red shoes, medical boots.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. Deron Holmes is so good at basketball. And the fact that they're going to be nice where he's your third option at five, where you run him next to Jokic, he could. Oh, my goodness. And they got, we haven't talked about Cam Johnson. Yeah. They got Cam Johnson.
Y'all are
20 a game last year.
I'm like ridiculous.
That and I think the underrated signing for them is Bruce Brown, who hasn't had the most success post leaving Denver in 2023.
But my biggest issue with Bruce Brown is I think he's a Jokic.
He's a Jokic merchant,
but like, and he's back with Jokic.
And I'll say if people remember what he looked like next to Jokic or like to a lesser degree like James Harden, right, in that kind of play finisher short role kind of role, he's really good at it. And they brought that guy back, so.
So I'll continue the theme of bringing up stats because I think this is a two-fold thing.
They're never letting you.
Nuggets.
Yeah, they're never.
Nuggets catch and shoot 3-point shooting the last two seasons, regular season and playoffs. So regular season, 38.2% on 22.3 attempts in 2024. And 2025, 38.2% again on 23 attempts. In the playoffs, 34% on 24 attempts in 2024. And in 2025, 32.8% on 24.9 attempts. So the reason, so twofold, right? Obviously, they added multiple very good shooters, and we're going to talk about that. But I think the other thing that's very underrated is the last two seasons, they've just been deficient in terms of playable bodies in a regular season. Famously, in 2024, the last pretty much 3 months of the season, they were playing playoff minutes in the playoff rotation to try to get the one seed. And obviously, we all remember that ended up coming down to that game against, I want to say, Minnesota in the last game of the season. And that's ultimately what led to them getting the second seed instead of the one seed and having to play Minnesota in the second round. And then this past season, same thing. They're kind of trotting out six or seven guys that are NBA players. And then those guys are having to play playoff-level minutes before they even get there. And so I think part of the three-point shooting being as bad as it's been the last two postseasons is, one, they just didn't have guys who were good enough shooters, right? Obviously, they had MPJ and Jamal Murray and Jokic, but outside of that, you don't have any volume. And then the other thing, I mean, these guys are just dead tired because if you look at the three-point shooting in round one this year, they shot relatively well. I want to say they shot 38.6%. And then they get to round two and it's 32.8%. And so I think bigger than just the individual acquisitions, having this many different combinations of NBA players you can play in a game is going to help them a lot because their starting lineup has been the best starting lineup in the league the last, four seasons going? Yeah. Allowing those guys to play less minutes and then ramp up in the playoffs as opposed to we're in playoff mode in February is going to help a lot for a lot of these guys.
Yeah. I mean, they have a legitimate, you brought it up, they've been playing, I don't know, seven's kind of generous. They had six NBA players last year. They legit have so much more depth. I mean, Christian Brown isn't going to be expected to do as much now. Peyton Watts is not going to be expected to do as much now. Julian Strother, guy.
Yeah, I think they can legitimately go 10 or 11 deep now.
Like, those are three dudes who were very young, were expected to do a lot. They now have that added playoff experience without as much of the expectation of, I need you to produce because you're having a bad night. I got THJ. You're having a bad night. Bruce Brown, go get him. You're having a bad night. Don't worry. Cam Johnson's here to help take care of this. Jonas Valanciunas, backup center now. The amount of depth that they brought in to help that team out, that's a scary team, dude. That's a scary team. I don't think anyone wants to see them in a seven-game series.
Right, so, fourth seed last year. I think all of us have the higher this year, right?
Yes.
I think
they're going to be a top three
seed. I think they are the two seed.
Yeah, I think they're locked in for the two seed, in my opinion. Barring help.
I think the range for them is 2-4. I'll say low, worst case scenario, 4.
I think it'll be a fight between us, them, and the Lakers for 2-4.
Yes.
But I do think that is 2-4.
Yeah.
I think the order in which it kind of comes down to.
Well, I'm not gonna lie. I think
we'll
there's
get
a,
to a
there,
team.
There's a
we'll
team.
Get to a team.
There's a team.
The team next, right?
And
no, not the team next.
Ben, I'll be the team next.
Either. Okay.
Okay, but moving on to the Clippers, 50 wins last year.
Yep.
There's a bunch of 51 teams in the West.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. They were really good, I felt like, in the regular season compared to what they were dealing with when it came to overall roster depth and things like that. And I think a big reason about that is they kind of leaned into, like, Zubac as an offensive player
Yeah.
When, like, if you look at his
took a massive leap.
He took a huge leap last year, and I expect him to continue to build on that. But overall, notable additions. They got Norman Powell out and then Bradley Beal in. I think that's a wash for me, personally.
It's a decline.
You think that's a decline?
Yes, Norman Powell is better.
You think Norman Powell is better? I think
Clippers need, Beal is probably a tad better. But
they went, and I kind of love they did this. They said, you know, our team's old. Everyone's concerned about it. And they said, you know what? Let's make
get it older.
Right? They added Brook Lopez. They added Chris Paul. They did get Social Security benefits from that. But, like, even with the AARP discounts, they're still going to be heavily taxed in the salary cap this year. They're going to be in the luxury tax. And it's just like, man, this team is a weird mix for me personally. It's a weird mix of this, like, last gasp of this era of, like,
this is it. Clippers basketball. This is their final go.
Right? They're just going all in, all or nothing. Let's see what happens this year. And then also, like, man, this team should have done something different about 2 years ago, when it really had the opportunity to pivot more. Because now you're kind of in this spot where, like, you don't really got any picks. You don't got any breathing room in the salary cap. It's all in or nothing. The average age of your roster is, like, 35. And
I got – this is my scouting report on them. You light my fire. I feel alive. You guys get the gist of it. Is this, like – I really want to see the stats on this. Is this the oldest team ever?
Yes. Is it the oldest team on here? The previous oldest team in NBA history was a 2001 Utah Jazz. The average age of that team was 32.6. This current
team. Do you know what the record was?
I do not. I want to say they did make the playoffs.
2001 Jazz?
Yes. That I think that was a playoff team.
That's like the last year of Stockton, is it not?
Second or third to last. The average age of this team is 33.2 years. This is the oldest team in NBA history.
53 win team that year. So.
If this is that year, this team was. Yeah. Yeah.
You said 2001. So
yeah. Yeah.
Oldest team in NBA history. What's that?
Yeah. The president's on it, I mean. Hey.
Bro, what's that mean with the guy on the driveway with, like.
Unk still got it.
That's his whole team, bro.
It's just, I don't believe in Kawhi Leonard's ability to stay healthy. And that's assuming, because we don't got to get too deep into it. But
he plays.
They're in a situation right now legally, so they may not.
Money trees.
Who knows?
Money trees is the perfect place to stay.
If Kawhi Leonard plays, I don't believe in his ability to play a 82-game season and then go deep into the playoffs. I don't believe in it at all.
Yeah.
And then everybody knows I'm a pretty big James Harden fan. He's getting up there in age, so he's going to see some regressions. And I think it's kind of certain at this point in time that guy's kind of a playoff dropper. We can call a spade a spade. I don't know. I don't believe in the Clippers as much as I think NBA Twitter does, just because I don't believe in their ability to stay healthy.
Playoffs-wise, I agree with you. Regular season-wise, if they're healthy, I think they're going to be uncomfortably.
That'd be like a 50-52-ish win team.
I don't think 50-52, man. You're going to be in this mess.
I mean, no. Yeah, they're going to be one of.
They'll be right back where they were this year.
I think they're anywhere from like 3 to 6. So
yeah, that's the problem. Is the West is like, I think it's going to be like it was last year. It's going to be like 5-6 teams that are one or two games apart,
and they're just bad old to me though. Like, I get somebody like Brook Lopez wasn't good. Bradley Beal wasn't good.
Chris Paul is not the same guy.
They didn't add good unks. Like,
so I mean, they added John Collins, you know.
I like the John Collins addition. I think John Collins with Harden and Zubac is going to be a very, very interesting front court pairing, along with how Harden operates.
Is he their best shooter outside like Bradley
Collins?
Kawhi and Harden.
Kawhi, yeah. Statistically speaking, statistically it might be, but he's not their best shooter though. They didn't get good unks to me.
Collins shot 40%.
Yeah, I must say John Collins is an excellent shooter, but like, he's not their best shooter.
I think Kawhi.
I mean, statistically speaking.
The thing, the problem that I have with the Clippers is, I think they brought in a combination of guys to fix certain issues, but the issue is, how do you integrate those guys without losing what made you good last year, which was them being the third best defense in the league. And obviously, you know, Chris Dunn is a huge part of that. But if I'm playing Bradley Beal out there, then Chris Dunn's not playing as much. If I'm playing John Collins out there, then you're losing some of the switchability with the wings, because he's playing the four. And then if I'm playing John Collins as a backup five, yeah, that unit's probably going to be really good offensively, but how good is a John Collins anchored unit going to be defensively? And so I think they have a bunch of decent parts, but I don't know how much those parts fit. And then I think at a certain point, you're just too old. And I think the problem there is, one, I mean, we try not to factor in injuries when we do this, right?
Yeah.
Because you can't...
It's kind of impossible.
But hey, I'll say, at that age, man, someone's...
Yeah, like, you can't predict... Obviously, like, the Fred stuff, right? You can't predict the guy tearing his ACL. You can't predict who's going to be out for the season, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. But at a certain point, when you reach a certain age threshold, I mean, you just got to expect some of these guys are going to miss time. And even beyond some of these guys missing time, it's just going to be some games where they just don't got it because they're old, right? We've seen this... I'm not even being funny. We've seen this with obviously Harden last year. He started off really slow. We've seen with Curry the last few years, and we're going to talk about them in a minute, but he's had months out the season where he's looked really bad. Obviously LeBron, same thing. And these are like star level guys. For these role player guys, I think that's an even bigger issue when we're talking about a conference that has a ton of depth. And even the teams, which we're going to talk about in a couple weeks, the bottom teams in the conference, some of those teams that are trying to reach up and take a spot in the playoffs, they're going to catch them on a bad night. Portland, when they go to Portland, you know, one of these games, Portland's going to catch them on a bad night where they just can't put the ball in the basket, and it's going to be a 101-92 game, and Portland's going to win.
Like, it's better players, but, like, that's kind of the downside of...
They're not better players. Brook Lopez isn't good.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, Bradley Beal was not good last year, and I get people are like, oh, it was the... He got benched for a reason, dude. He was a bench caliber player last year. He's not good anymore for real.
I'm saying that, like, defensive backcourt of James Harden and Bradley Beal, that
I don't know how many minutes they can play together.
And I'm so rude with you, bro. Even when Kawhi does play, that's not the same.
He's not the same defender. Not
that defense, credit to Zubac. There's one guy that deserved real.
Zubac and Chris Dunn, man.
It was him. They didn't have a defense. They had a defender. It was Ivica Zubac, and whenever Chris Dunn happened to be on the court. Other than that, dude, it was cone, meet this other cone. And you know what they added? Cone, meet this other cone.
Older cone.
That's it, bro. Brooke Lopez don't guard no more.
Okay, so you know what?
Don't guard. Okay. Like, they're not going to be a good defense. Let's get to
them
at all.
Let's get to this then, because we've been pretty consensus so far. What's your range for Clippers?
I ain't going to lie. I got them 7 to 10.
Whoa.
Wow. I got them a playing team. I think they're a playing team.
I'm not shocked by that.
I still think they're a playoff team, barring injury, which it feels like an oxymoron when I'm talking about a team that's the oldest.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of hard to say barring injury but when you're 33 years old.
Barring injury, I still think they're like 3-6. I think they're a playoff team.
I got them 3-6.
I'll say, I
think they're the biggest swing in the West.
They're not better than Rockets or Nuggets, but knock on wood, if either of those two teams see some injuries, I can see a scenario where the Clippers
They're the biggest.
I'll say 4-8. I don't think... Well, actually, I'll say 5-8. I don't think they're going to be top four? I don't think they're going to be better than Lakers. I don't think they're going to be better than us. And I don't think they're going to be better than Denver.
I'll bet money they don't host a playoff series.
Yeah, I think they're going to be going
on the road. That's valid. No, I'm just saying, I think it's the difference between they won't and they can't.
No, but I think...
I don't know if they can. Because I'm going to just be... So
they could be the four seed.
Obviously, with the Rockets...
Let me ask you... My bad. Let me ask you this. With a team that old, at what point do you have to coast to hope you make it there?
Just the whole season, I'm going to be real.
Like, they don't, and this thing, they're young guys.
The whole year.
That's what I'm saying. And the young guys they have, like Kobe Brown, Cam Christie.
These are guys who they're not going to play.
That's what I'm saying. Like, whenever, no troll. Do you know who their third string point guard technically is?
No.
Is it Chris Dunn?
You know him very well.
No.
Bones Island?
Ty Washington.
Oh, they did sign Ty Washington this offseason.
Ty Washington is their third string point guard technically. And if you don't want it to be him, guess who else it is? Patricia Mills. It is Patrick Mills. Patty Mills is on that team, dude.
Yes.
It's Patty, dude.
Patty Mills is in the NBA?
Yes.
Yeah, he's still in the league.
I'm glad he is. I love his jumper in 2K. But that's it. Like, they can't load manage anyone, but they need to. It's just, and when we get to, because I want to pivot to this other team.
I said, we got
to
run through these last two teams.
Yeah, we
got a team like Minnesota, who I think Minnesota is going to be a team that shocks a lot of people. Because one, I think Anthony Edwards is going to take another leap.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think he's going to take another leap. I think Julius Randle is going to acclimate to that team better. And I'll go out on a limb here, bro. Rob Dillingham is going to be good this season. I think Rob Dillingham is going to be good. And I think the juice that they've been lacking with Mike Conley playing point guard the last couple of years, I think he'll bring it. I'm not saying it's going to look good every night, but I think Rob Dillingham is going to be a really, really key contributor for them. I think his pull-up shooting, just his quickness overall, his ball-handling ability, I think he's a better passer than a lot of people give him credit for. I think they'll be able to insulate him defensively because they got some defenders up there in Minnesota, yeah, man.
He's a cone.
Yeah. Like, he's a cone. No, by all means, he's a cone, but they can put four real defenders next to him. So they'll be able to insulate him really well. I think Minnesota's going to be a lot better than a lot of people are giving him credit for. It's been quiet over there, and I think that's scary because the last couple years of Minnesota, because all the Ant hype, it's been, oh, this is when Minnesota is 2-seed. This is Ant MVP. This is Ant this. Minnesota this. It's been real quiet up in Minnesota. Not a lot's going on. The ownership stuff hasn't become a problem anymore. Hasn't really been much hoopla in terms of trades or what they've done in the draft.
In terms of moves,
they've been real quiet.
So real quick to recap that, Timberwolves last year were 49-33, 10th best record in the league. Notable additions, like you said, very quiet. Johnny Juzang, an offseason without Anthony Edwards making headlines.
Which I think is actually important.
They re-signed Joe Ingles. They re-signed Julius Randle. They re-signed Naz Reid. And then they lost they lost Josh Minot, and they lost Luka Garza. So
of those three, I think Nikhil Alexander-Walker had a really good
season. Yeah, that's the biggest.
It's a decent loss for them.
He had a really good shooting season for them, but I don't think that's a bad loss.
Well, they got Terry Shannis Jr.
Yeah.
TSJ taking the minutes, dude.
Yeah.
So two, and I think this is also going to coincide with Dre's point. So two quick stats. So one, they had a 5 net rating last year, which is 4th in the entire league. And they finished 49-33. So obviously, I did research on, you know, because why? Where's the disparity there?
They had a
negative 8.4 clutch net rating in the league last year, which was 23rd out of 30 teams, and they were 20-26 in the clutch. So you can see, even a team last year, they were a few swings away from being a top two seed.
Yeah.
And also another thing that Dre said with Julius Randle acclimating. That's another point. I think it's a good point. Randle with Ant last year was averaging 21-5-8 on 58 true shooting. Randle without Ant averaged 26-7-8 on 66 true shooting last season.
Yeah.
And I think that's very important because they're going to do a lot of staggering. And if Ant does take another leap, you're going to get 48 minutes of pretty consistent, high-level primary option hoops. And I think that's important for them because as long as Rudy is there, they're going to be a top 10 defense, obviously. And I think...
Yeah.
I think saying top 10 is honestly being a bit conservative. It's probably more so like top 7. If Ant and Randle are good enough to give them a top 8-7 offense,
top 10 defense, top 8 offense.
And then they also flex this clutch stuff, which that's going to be Ant taking a leap as an isolation scorer and a decision maker. Yeah, I mean, Dre's not wrong. This could be a team that could be a top team.
I think that's the team.
Well, let's get into it then.
I think they're the team that probably breaks. I have them 4. I think they end up 4, no lower than 6. I think 6 would be like a really, really bad year for them, honestly. I think 6 is like...
Yeah, they shouldn't have finished 6 again.
They should be a comfortable top 4 seed to me. I really think so.
I think they're like 3 or 4.
I'll say, yeah. I think they're anywhere from 3 to 6. That's where I'm looking for.
I kind of think their floor is a lot higher than we think it is. That's why I said like 3 to 4. I think aside from OKC and Denver...
I think their floor is the playoffs.
I'll say this. I think after Minnesota, and we'll get to this next team, I think after that, I think there's a drop-off, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I agree.
Massive drop-off.
I think
Spurs to take a leap and then the Mavericks.
I don't think this next team is that far.
Oh, well, I think
the Warriors?
Oh, I think right, so let's go ahead and get into that.
I think they stink.
Wait, real quick. Everyone said their ranges on Minnesota, right?
Yeah, I think it's from like 3 to 4 or 5. I think barring an injury, I think they have home court.
I'll say 3 to 6.
I'll say 2 to 6. I don't think they're falling below the playoffs. I think this is a playoff team.
Yeah,
I think there is five teams that I think are comfortably making the playoffs.
No,
I think the top four we talked about and the Timberwolves.
They need an eighth man.
So let's get into that, right? Let's get into that. So
they ain't signed Horford yet.
The Warriors were 48-34 last year. They had the 11th best record in the entire league. For notable additions, they haven't made a single transaction this offseason. That is not a typo. That is not incorrect. They have not made a single transaction.
That's crazy,
bro. Notable losses. Kevon Looney. The ability to scrimmage in practice. Affordable housing.
They cannot.
Yeah, they have a player signed.
They can't do 5-on-5.
Training camps in a week. They
have a player signed.
No, they're going to sign. Okay. They're going to get this Kuminga thing figured out, and they're going to
call.
Also, his agent expects a trade.
What?
I saw a report that said Kuminga's agent is expecting a trade.
I mean, either way, whenever that finishes, they are going to sign the other guys because that is what's holding them up. But I will say, I think very similar to the Clippers, the problem that they are going to have is because they lack bodies on their roster. They're going to be good when Draymond Curry and Jimmy Butler play, but they're also going to have to play a lot really early. And if they're playing a lot really early for these teams that have more depth in them, it's going to be really, really hard for them to keep up record-wise.
I just think if you look at the Warriors last year in its entirety, I think you're kind of doing a disservice to what that
team Yeah. It's two different teams.
Post-Jimmy Butler, that was a different team. As
I agree.
Put out for us. They went 23-7 with Jimmy Butler on a 63 win pace, had a 9.5 net rating. Positive. Like, if that team can do 70% of that next season, that's 51 teams.
Yeah, but...
No, the hell it's not. Why not? Can I say why? They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 guys on contract right now. Four of them happen to be Jackson Rowe. Who the hell is that? Yi Santos.
I actually don't know who that
Quentin
is.
Quentin Post and Trace Jackson Davis.
Hey, respect TDJ, man. Or TJD.
He stinks.
They like him in Golden State.
Quentin Post is a better player.
They like him in Golden State.
Quentin Post decent.
He's good.
I can't hate. Brandon Podziemski, I ain't going to hold you, big fella. You said you was going to make the Olympic team. It's not looking good, bro. It's not looking good right now at all. This team is horrible. They have no depth. Steph Curry is getting a year older. Jimmy Butler got paid. Does he care about basketball anymore? Please tell me if you know that, because that man just got $60 million for the next 2 seasons. Why does he have to care anymore? That man's entire objective, and he said it was, I want to get paid. He got paid on a team he didn't even want to go to. He didn't want to go to Golden State.
I mean, he still played for them, though. He played well for them.
He didn't want to go to Golden State, folk.
I'll say this, and I'll bow out on it. I don't think that the Warriors are going to be that good next season because Jimmy Butler and Draymond Green specifically are getting up there in age. Steph Curry has kind of beat father time, so, you know, I won't count him out just yet. But Draymond and Jimmy have started showing signs of decline.
Who, Steph?
So that's
regular
my
season production.
Steph is still a monster. I'm never gonna count.
So in totality, Steph is still one of the best players in the league. But I do think in a regular season context at this point, you have to factor in for 2 months of the season where he does actually look his age.
Yeah.
And I think that becomes a pretty massive issue in the Western Conference, where that 2 months of the season where Steph looks his age, they might drop 4 or 5 spots in the standings. Especially considering we're talking about the teams that are in the top 7. The teams that are from 12 to 8.
Tell me, like, DeAnthony Melton and Al Horford changed this team's outlook.
And I'll say that, I mean, maybe they trade, like,
it's better than
maybe they finesse, like, Malik Monk from Sacramento for, like, Kuminga. I agree. But at least gives them a playable body. What I was going to say, my point, and this I'll end up on here, is I just think it is a shame of how they have treated the latter half of Steph Curry's career, trying to that two-timeline nonsense, bro. You should have went.
I mean, they just missed on the draft pick. I ain't gonna lie.
Even if they did, bro,
all of them.
You should have went straight to the walls, like going selling out to make sure you put the best around Steph Curry.
Yeah.
I hate Steph Curry with every fiber in my body. That is the greatest shooter to ever walk this planet. The Warriors will probably never get a player half as good as that ever again.
Yeah.
And you did not do everything in your power to maximize that. Yep. That is a shame.
Okay, so before we close it out, Danny predicts
7-10.
7-10. So you still have them to play in?
Yeah, I mean, they're a play-in team.
Okay, where do you got them?
7-11.
I think
there's a chance.
I agree. They
could. I think healthy. They're like 6-8.
We're gonna get into this next week or 2 weeks from now when we talk about the bottom teams in the West.
Teams that you had 6-2. Like, come on, man.
I think the top stays.
I have them 6-11. 6-11 is where I'm at.
We're gonna get in this when we talk about the other teams in the West 2 weeks from now, but. I mean, historically speaking, when you talk about playoff standing shifts, it's usually 2 or 3 teams that drop out. And I mean, when you talk about the teams that we talked about today, I mean, is there any team that's more likely to drop out than them?
I'll say, because we're going to talk about San Antonio in a couple of weeks.
I think the Clippers and the Warriors, because of their age, and for the Warriors, their stars are older and the lack of depth, I think they have the best chance of having a
fall. Who knows what's with Dallas?
You know what I push back on that? 1 year ago today, you asked me that question. I named you the same 2 teams. correct?
I mean,
that's a good point.
Until they drop off, I'm not going to predict it.
But I mean, the counterpoint can be made. At some point, they are going to drop off.
Eventually, and I think this is the year. Because I don't think either one of them made the correct moves. But we will end the podcast there, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for coming back for another episode of the Right Read Podcast. Make sure you like, share, comment, subscribe. All of our socials will be down below in the description. Turn on that notification bell. And yeah, we will be doing East Preview Part 2 next week, then West Preview Part 2 2 weeks after that.
Yeah, hopefully nothing else happens.
That series, Media Day season, basketball is back, man. So we will be back in full swing very, very, very soon. Love y'all. Appreciate y'all. We'll catch y'all next time.